Dr. Vanden Haag was a former president of the Philadelphia Society, is an author, a psychiatrist, a professor, and several other things. I'm not sure just where the list stops. Always very interesting in debate, very quick. I think his latest book is in the form of an argument in favor of capital punishment. So he doesn't specialize in taking popular sides of public issues. Dr. Vanden Haag.
The original title of my discussion was to be Pornography and the First Amendment. Don Lipset, in his wisdom, thought it was a good idea to veil this decently in discussing under a more general title. But I will discuss pornography and the First Amendment, though I cannot promise that I will hand out samples of either. The questions that we have to decide and consider the subject are really two. Should we try to restrain pornography? Is it morally or socially useful to do so? And the second question, which is a constitutional one, can we do so under our constitution? Are we legally entitled to do so? Let me briefly, at least, start with the second question, which is the less interesting one, in a sense. The First Amendment, of course, prohibits Congress from abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. And this has been, via the 14th Amendment, applied also to the states. There are some questions on whether the 14th Amendment really was meant that way, questions raised by Professor Walter Burns, but in practice, we have to assume that the First Amendment now is applied both to the federal government and to the state governments. Still, and I understand that Professor Burns already made this point this morning, and I am tempted to accuse him of anticipatory plagiarism. The First Amendment prohibits abridging freedom of speech and of the press, meaning by that the printed word. It does not say anything. Should we not allow each individual to decide for himself how to amuse himself, and if it is bad for him, well, that is his business. Well, the answer to that, I think, now you'll have to excuse me, I'm not much of a historian, so my attributions may not be altogether correct, but when I look at the history of political ideas in the United States, it seems that there have always been two strains which have never been fully reconciled to one another. One derived more or less from Thomas Hobbes over John Locke and Hume, which basically is an individualistic strain, saying in effect that the individual should be free to do anything that does not interfere directly with the freedom of other individuals, that the government is not the custodian of our conscience, that individuals may commit sins, but that is between them and their maker. The government is not to try to enforce virtue either directly or indirectly. The other strain, more or less, comes from Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and it says, again, more or less directly, that a government cannot function that does not try in some way to enhance virtue among the citizens. As I said, these two strains have never been fully reconciled. We tended ideologically to uphold the Lockean strain, but in practice I think we turned more to the Rousseauian strain. But be that as it may, I will give you as my own view that the idea that we can have, an idea that libertarians have, but also people who are simply sympathetic to the libertarian viewpoint without sharing it in all respects, the idea that somehow you can look at society as a collection of individuals connected with one another only by mutual utility and by mutual protection, that idea seems simply to be factually wrong. It does not seem to me that a society can exist where individuals do not identify with one another, so that they have compassion with one another. There is an old story. I remember Karl Marx making great fun of it. Menenius Agrippa, a somewhat legendary Roman senator, is depicted as addressing a rebellious Roman populace, trying to explain to them that it is indeed true that the senatorial class, the Roman nobility, must consume things that the proletarians will not have, because society is like an organism in which the senatorial class represent the stomach and to some extent the brain, and the proletarian class the hands and feet. Now, Menenius Agrippa insisted, unless the stomach digests and eats, directly, the hands and feet, the rest of the body, cannot be nourished. Now, Marx made a great deal of fun of this idea because he pointed out that there is no neurological connection between different individuals. The fact that I eat will not in any way satisfy your appetite or nourish you. And of course, Marx in this respect was wrong. But he neglected to mention that there is a psychic connection. Unless I feel to some extent your hunger pains, unless I am interested not just in my own welfare but also in your welfare, there can be no society. Unless people are willing to make sacrifices for one another, there would be no defense in war. Unless I feel for you in some sort of disaster also, unless there's some sort of compassion which is based on mutual identification, there can be no functioning society. Now, my point is very simply that pornography erodes this indispensable social bond, this indispensable identification with one another, on which society must ultimately rest. How does pornography erode this bond? Very simply. If you look at any piece of pornography, whether it is a movie or something written or so, you will find that the main import of it is to regard other people not as ends in themselves, but purely as means to one's own sexual gratification. To disregard any sort of personal relationship, any sort of identification, but to simply invite us to regard other people purely as means. Now, it is true that this invitation is not immediately followed by most people most of the time. But it is also true that any, and that is indeed why we have the First Amendment, any kind of communication is meant to influence people, and does. The degree of influence depending, of course, on the personal experience and on the personality of the person to be influenced. Some will be influenced a great deal, some very little. But there is some influence, and if the matter persists, there is some reason to believe that more and more people will be influenced. And as more and more people are influenced, more and more people will tend to regress to this basically pre-adolescent fantasy, which looks at other people purely as a means to our own gratification. More and more people will forget, will overcome, as it were, the work, the psychic work that is done largely in adolescence, and which leads us to recognize that other people too are like ourselves, ends, not means, not to be purely used instrumentally for our own gratification. Now, if that notion takes hold, then indeed it becomes possible to look at other people as we have looked, say, at cattle, as means. We can use the hide, we can use the teeth, we can use the meat, we can use this, we can use the other. That is, in effect, what the Nazis did with respect to the Jews and generally their enemies in Germany. There were various other strains that tended to a confluence in this occasion, but the major thing that I'm trying to point out is that the Nazis were enabled to accomplish their atrocities by simply disregarding that other people, these other people, were human beings as they are, and could be or should be identified with, felt for, etc. What the Nazis did was simply to regard them purely as means. What, in my opinion, pornography ultimately leads to is to regard other people purely as means, and it is for this reason that I fear that the efforts being made, difficult as they are under our constitution, are worthwhile. We should do the best we can to preserve our freedom to express ideas, to convey information, but at the same time, we should do what we can to restrain pornography, which, as I said before, does neither express ideas nor convey information. Now, needless to say, if we follow this course, as with all kinds of violations of social rules, we will certainly not eliminate pornography any more than we can eliminate crime. The usefulness of laws is not in eliminating what we wish to reduce, but simply in reducing it, making it harder, making it more costly, reducing it, and making it rarer. That, I think, we should do. Thank you.